1 Samuel chapter 14. Now, this is going to be an interesting study tonight, I think. Jonathan, his name means given of God. Saul's name means what? Demanded, right? In other words, ironically, graciously, Saul, this king who's got a problem with his own self-will and all the rest, he has a son like Jonathan, who's a faithful man. He's a man that's after God and wants to do the will of God. Now, Samuel, if you recall, his two sons were losers in a sense. They didn't do the things that Samuel did. They were taking bribes and doing all kinds of weird stuff, right? And yet Samuel was a man of God. So here we have Samuel, a man of God, has two sons that are blowing it big time. And yet a king like Saul, a man like Saul who's blowing it himself, has a son like Jonathan who's doing great. Now, why does the Lord include that? Well, sometimes that's the way it is, isn't it? Oh, oftentimes you can do your best to raise your kids. Sometimes they just go their own way anyway, don't they? And sometimes you might know someone who came from a real rotten family, and yet they're following hard after the Lord. God's gracious. And if a person desires to follow after him, doesn't matter what kind of family he came from. On the other hand, you can't inherit salvation from your parents, can you? It's been well said, God has no grandchildren. Only children, you see. Now, the people demanded a king. They got Saul. God, though, in his grace, gives them Jonathan. He's a gift from God. In the midst of Saul recklessly going about trying to rule the people, doing a terrible job of it, in the midst of that, God's gracious hand comes and gives them Jonathan to have victory over the Philistines in spite of Saul. Has God ever done that for you? Even though you have demanded and tried to have your own way and yet you find yourself being miserable, have you ever found that God faithfully comes and gives you a Jonathan, gives you a blessing, gives you deliverance or overcomes something in your life? It's amazing. He's good. He's gracious. Now, we saw that this King Saul is, again, kind of doing a terrible job. But it says that Jonathan, in verse 1 of chapter 14, came to pass upon a day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said unto the young man that bare his armor, come, let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side. But he told not his father. Round 2 for Jonathan. Previously, him and his 1,000 men took on a garrison of the Philistines, unbeknownst to dear old dad. Didn't tell his father, just took on the enemy on his own. And here again, the enemy is surrounding the children of Israel. But Jonathan's in a different location. He's kind of here in this particular spot, watching the Philistines from a distance, as everybody was, and he decides, we need to get closer and check things out. So he tells his armor bearer that we need to get over there where the enemy is and see what we can do, see what we can check out. But he doesn't tell his dad. Now Saul, verse 2, he tarried in the uttermost part of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree. What does that mean? That means Saul's at home. He's resting at home. He's kicked back under his pomegranate tree, which is in Migron, and the people that were with him were about 600 men. So Saul basically went home to Gibeah and sitting under the pomegranate tree. You know, you see him with one of those drinks with an umbrella sticking out. You know. And he's just kind of watching what's going on. The enemy's way out there. Well, you know, and he's not doing anything. That's the idea here. He's sitting under the pomegranate tree watching the enemy, you know, from home, watching the situation from home. And Ahiah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh, wearing an ephod. And the people knew not that Jonathan was gone. Jonathan and his armor bearer took off. They're not going to wait around anymore. You ever feel like that? I hope so. I hope you feel like that once in a while. I'm not going to wait around anymore. For what? For the enemy. I'm not going to wait around for him anymore. I'm not going to sit under the pomegranate tree with my umbrella drink. I'm going to go do something. I'm going to get busy. I'm going to get after it. I'm not going to wait anymore. I'm tired of waiting. Jonathan was tired of waiting. Nobody knew he was gone. And between the passages by which Jonathan sought to go over unto the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp rock on the one side and a sharp rock on the other side. Now, watch this. The name of the one rock was Bozez, and the name of the other was Senna. Now, Jonathan wants to do something for the Lord. He's not really interested in impressing his dad, is he? I mean, he didn't even tell his dad that he's leaving. So he's not into really doing much for old King Saul, as we'll see later on in the story. He doesn't think much of his father. Well, as we will find out, nobody thought much about him. But here's the thing. He's setting out to do something by faith. And do you know what he's going to encounter? These two sharp rocks that are in the pathway, that are in the trail that led through to where the Philistines were. There was these two sharp rocks. And what you need to know is God gives them names. You know, and we think, well, why did God name the rocks? Why did people name rocks? We name rock. We have face rock out here, right? You know, it's no different. I mean, they're face rock. You know, this rock's named Bozez and, you know, Sinna. I mean, rock, you know, they name things, you know. We do too. So, but what you need to know is that the one rock, Bozez, means mud or bog or slime. And Sinna, the other rock that was there, means the enemy. So in the pathway of somebody like Jonathan and his armor bearer, willing to go by faith to take on the enemy, the slimy enemy is in the way. The sharp rocks that are there to try and cause these two harm. And by the way, folks, if you're interested in moving out by faith in some venture or some way or whatever it is in your life, maybe there's a job opportunity, or maybe you want to seek out some ministry opportunities, or maybe, you know, you're just looking for something to do for the Lord. That would be an interesting thought. Now, if that's true of you, understand this. Anytime you move out by faith, there's always this kind of opposition. The slime of the enemy will be in your path. Always. Every time. You can't take a venture of faith without this being true. It just is. And the greater the venture of faith, the slimier the enemy seems to be. Now, verse 5. The forefront of the one was situate northward over against Michmash, and the other southward over against Gibeah. So they were on the north and south of this pathway. And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, "Come and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us." I like that verse. Hey, let's go see. Maybe the Lord will do something. Right? Let's just go see what the Lord's going to do. By the way, when I moved to Bandon years ago, my pastor John said that. Let's just go see what the Lord wants to do. What? Is that all you have to say? Yep. Oh, yeah. And have the time of your life, he said. So what now? You know, go see what the Lord wants to do. Don't you have anything other than that to say? Nope. Okay. But you know, it's interesting to see what the Lord's going to do. And that's what he's saying to his armor bearer. Jonathan says, let's see, maybe the Lord will work for us. Maybe he'll do something awesome if we go. For there is no, watch this, restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. Jonathan's faith is in God, not in him and his armor bearer, not certainly in King Saul back there under the pomegranate tree. His faith is in God, and you know what he's saying here? It doesn't matter to God, does it? Does God need a big army to take on the Philistines, or can he do it with just a couple of us? Hey, there's no difference to the Lord, is there? Now, he knows his Bible history, doesn't he? I mean, he's had the scriptures declared to him. He's studied a little bit. He knows what happened with Gideon, and he knows that God's not into big numbers. He doesn't need big numbers. And by the way, he knows the word too, because back in Joshua chapter 23, I'll read it to you, verse 10. You can jot it down if you like. But in Joshua 23 and verse 10, one man, God said, of you shall chase 1,000. For the Lord your God, he is he that fighteth for you, as he promised you. So what's Jonathan doing? He's just taking God at his word. You ever done that? Have you ever taken God at his word and just said, you know, he said it, I'm going to do it. That's what he's doing. By the way, that's faith. Exercising faith. Saying, the Lord said this, I'm going to do it. What a remarkable thing to do. And I need to say this, folks, it is remarkable. The reason this makes us stand up and say, wow, two guys? Two guys are going to just march in there? Well, God said they could, didn't he? Yeah, back there in Joshua 23. One of you can chase 1,000, he said. So what are they going to do? Well, a couple of them. They should be good for a couple of thousand. This is so good. This is so awesome. And his armor bearer says unto him, verse 7, do all that is in thine heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thy heart. His armor bearer says, go ahead, I've got your back, you know, I'm in. Do whatever you think you, let's go, I'm in, I'm with you. I'm with you. It's awesome to have somebody say, I'm with you, when you're stepping out in faith, you know. It's awesome to have a partner, isn't it? It'll say, I'm with you on this. You know, when we moved to Bandon, my wife's, you know, heart was not to come here. But she said, I'm with you. I'm with you. And the Lord did a mighty thing in her. And it's awesome to have a partner that says, I'm with you. Even though you know it's going to be tough sometimes. It's going to be a big transition. It's going to be a big change. Lots of things to see come to pass if it's going to work out. But it's good. And this armor bearer says, hey, I'm with you. Whatever you're going to do, I'm there. See, I'm in. Then said Jonathan, behold, we pass over unto these men, and we will discover ourselves unto them, or reveal ourselves to them. We're going to show them where we're at. We're going to let them see us. And if they say unto to us, verse 9, tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place and will not go up unto them. So if we go up and show them who we are, hey, here we are, the Jew boys, see, here we are, the Hebrews, here we are, the children of Israel, Yahoo, here we are, then if they look at us and say, hey, you stay right there, we're coming, then we'll skedaddle, Jonathan says, because then the Lord's not in it. Now, he says, but, verse 10, if they say to us, come unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hand, and this shall be a sign unto us. So, if we say to them, here we are, Yahoo, and they say, hey, you come on up here, you Hebrews, we'll show you what's what. Then we'll know that the Lord's with us, and we'll go up and take them. Now, this rings a little bit like Gideon's account, but a little different. There's no fleece involved here, is there? It's just well, let's just see what the Lord's going to do. The obvious thing for the enemy, listen, once he sees that you're stepping out in faith, the obvious thing is, let's get him, right? I mean, the Philistines should have looked at them and said, we're going to get you. We're coming right there to get you right now, right? But they didn't. So he said, look, if they do the unusual thing, like, hey, you come up here, then we'll know. I mean, that's not the normal thing to do. So, by the way, what's being said here is profound, I think. Don't make the enemy come to me. I go get him. Let's do it this way. And if the Lord is in it, then it will be this way. What way? We'll go get him. If the Lord is in this, he's going to say, go up there and take them. Don't wait for them to come. And I find that's true. You see, some people are in kind of a Saul-ish situation. What do you mean? I mean, they're sitting at the back porch of their house under the pomegranate tree. And they're waiting for something to happen, in a sense. What are you doing? Waiting on the Lord. Just waiting. How long have you been waiting? Well, got a pomegranate tree, you know. I just think the Lord's going to do something big. When? I don't know. You know, got my pomegranate tree. I'm doing pretty good. I'm in the shade. I'm all right. Instead of saying, you know what? I think the Lord really does want to do something with my life. And I'm ready to do something about that. And the Lord, I believe, is speaking to some tonight about this. That there's some things that need to happen, and you need to get out from underneath the pomegranate tree and start moving a bit. I love the contrast here. This is an offensive move. We're going to go up there and get them. And both of them discovered themselves, verse 11, unto the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, behold, the Hebrews come forth. Behold, they come forth. They're coming out of their holes where they have hid themselves. They're describing these guys like animals, like they've been hiding away in dens. Oh, behold, look at the Hebrews. They're coming out of their holes. They came out of hiding. They're taunting them, you see. And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, come up to us and we will show you a thing. Ah. So the Philistines say, hey, you guys, come up here. Just like Jonathan said, if it's the Lord, they'll call us up there. And so Jonathan said unto his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. Follow me up there. Now, by the way, it's not coincidental, I don't think, that they had to go up. They had to climb up there. They had to climb the rocks to get up. Because, guys, this is the thing. Faith always rises to the occasion. We always are having to rise to the occasion when faith is exercised. I mean, I need to get up and get going. And so they did. They went up, you see, and Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet, and his armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan. Listen carefully. Jonathan climbed up, and the enemy fell down. You climb up by faith, and the enemy's going to fall down. And guys, whatever it is that you're going through, whatever we're dealing with, whatever struggle, whatever you're trying to overcome, whatever issue or problem or whatever it might be that's in your life, this is the key. By faith, I rise up. And when I do so, that is when the enemy falls. Now, who's experiencing the victory? Jonathan, his armor bearer. Well, what's Saul doing? Having another umbrella drink thing. Now, this is the thing. People that are stagnant in their walk with the Lord, and there's many of them. There's many people that are just dry, bored. This whole Christian thing, I mean, it's just kind of a, you know, this mundane, you know, mamby-pamby, I just kind of hang around. And well, then you're not exercising faith. I can guarantee you that. Because Jonathan is armor bearer here. You think that they're sitting around as the enemy is falling around them? Do you think they're going, wow, this is boring. Isn't there anything else to do? Because this is really a drag. Do you think they're doing that? No way. These guys are fired up. Enemies dropping like flies. And his armor bearer comes after Jonathan and slays him. It's like Jonathan sets him up and the armor bearer comes and lops their head off. Tag team. And the first slaughter which Jonathan, his armor bearer, made was about 20 men, which was, as it were, a half acre of land which a yoke of oxen might plow. So on about a half acre, there was 20 guys in the first stage. Now, these guys would have been, by the way, those that were on the outskirts, these would have been the trained fighters. These are skilled warriors that are out there. And these two men wiped out 20 of them, just like that. And there was a trembling, verse 15, in the host, in the field, and among all the people, the garrison and the spoilers, they also trembled, and the earth quaked, so that it was a very great trembling. So all of a sudden, the whole group of Philistines sees that two guys just took on some of the meanest warriors they have. Just real lickety-split. And they start shaking in their boots, if they had boots back then, probably sandals. They were shaking. They were trembling because they looked and saw that these guys were fearless. They're exercising faith, man. And that scares the enemy to death. And the whole group of them starts trembling. And when they moved by faith, folks, watch this. When Jonathan and his armor bearer moved by faith, then the Lord took over and shook the earth. If you want to see things get shaken up in your life, exercise a little faith. Do something radical. Do something like Jonathan and say, I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to get involved in it. I'm going to exercise a little faith. I'm going to move out in this. I'm going to go ahead and take a chance. Why not? Why not? You know, I'm tired of waiting around. I'm tearing down the pomegranate tree. I'm getting moving. I'm going to do something exciting. I'm going to serve the Lord, you see. And watch and see, because the Lord starts shaking things up, all right. He shook the whole earth. Do you see what the Lord is up to? When a man, one man, any man, anybody will exercise faith, God will shake things up. He always will. You want to see it? Try it. I dare you. You see. And the watchmen of Saul in Gibeah, verse 16 of Benjamin, looked and behold, the multitude melted away and they went on beating down one another. Well, now the army of the Philistines, they're beating each other up. They're just whipping each other. The whole thing turned into a frenzy. The enemy starts devouring itself because they're so afraid of two men. Two men. Can you imagine that? Well, two men and God is a majority. Isn't it? Again, Jonathan said it. How many men does God need? None. Well, then two's better than none. You know, if he doesn't need anybody, then yeah, I'm in. You know, if he doesn't need me or anybody else, I'll go. I mean, he's going to win anyway, right? I might as well be on the right side and go, you see. This is so good. And they watch from a distance. Saul and his men are looking out there. You can see, you know, there they are, you know. under the patio, looking out there, and they see all the enemy just fleeing and wiping each other out, and they're thinking, what is going on over there? And watch this. Then Saul said unto the people that were with him, number now, and see who is gone from us. Who's missing? Saul says. Who's not among us that was here before? Count the people. Let's find out who's not here. And when they had numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. The only ones that are missing, Jonathan and his armor bearer. Now, you'd think, wouldn't you, that Saul and the rest of the people would go, dude, those two are wiping out the army of the Philistines, right? You'd think that they'd think, wow, that is the most awesome thing I've ever seen in my life. But Saul said unto Ahiah, bring hither the ark of God. Now, Jonathan is enjoying the victory with his armor bearer, without the ark, right? Without anything. He doesn't have any help. He doesn't have the men. He doesn't have the army. He's enjoying the victory without it. Saul immediately says, we need the ark. This is Saul's mentality. This is Saul's heart. He thinks that it's going to be some kind of superficial outward thing that's going to make this thing happen even better. And what happens is tragic. For the children of Israel, at that time, you see, the ark was at that place at that time. And it came to pass while Saul talked unto the priest that the noise that was in the host of the Philistines went on and increased. And Saul said unto the priest, withdraw thy hand. Now, the priest would have had the ephod, right? And the priest is trying to, you know, probably do some business with the Lord, you know, like maybe we should check with the Lord on this, you know. And it got noisy in the battle. And so Saul says, withdraw thy hand. In other words, forget that. Forget that spiritual stuff. We need to get get the ark, get the thing. Let's go. Saul's a religious man. He's not a righteous man. And so he tells the priest, stop it, you know, and now I'm going to do my own thing, I guess. And Saul and all the people that were with him, verse 20, him assembled themselves, and they came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was a very great discomfiture. They were wiping each other out. Moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. Likewise, all the men of Israel, which had hid themselves in the Mount Ephraim, when they had heard the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after them in battle. So, apparently, some of the children of Israel had swapped sides. They had gone over to the camp of the Philistines because they were afraid the Philistines were going to win this thing. But now, because of two men exercising some faith, they're all coming back. Do you see it? Some of you have lost some to the Philistines, haven't you? Haven't we? A couple of you need to exercise some faith. And let's get them back. You see. This is such a key understanding for me. The Lord is so impressing on my heart right now about this particular issue. Guys, it's faith. It's your walk. It's your life. It's your believing. It's oftentimes at stake here. And these two were exercising some faith, and all these people that had been given over to the Philistines are coming back now. They're coming back. Remember when God spoke to Abraham about believing, and he said, Abraham, you've heard me and believed and have obeyed me, and because you have done so, I'm going to bless all the nations of the world. And can you imagine Abraham's face when God told him that? You're what? You're going to bless all the nations because I obeyed you? You mean my obedience to you, my faith in you, the way I walk with you, the way I believe in what you're saying and do and act upon it is affecting the world? Yeah. And guys, your walk, the faith that you exercise or don't, is affecting the world around you. And God will be faithful as he was to Abraham in your life. I'm telling you. He will bless all things around you for your obedience to him. It's an amazing thing. I mean, it'll blow your mind if you just stop for a second and think about it. It'll just about send you off your chair. So don't fall off your chair. Stay seated. But understand this. This is huge. This is a huge, huge issue. And so the people were coming back. And the Lord saved Israel that day, verse 23, and the battle passed over into Bethaven. And the men of Israel were distressed that day. Why? For Saul had adjured the people, saying, "Cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may be avenged in my enemies." So none of the people tasted any food. Saul, because Jonathan's experiencing victory, he's the one exercising faith. He's the one enjoying this victorious march through the Philistine army. And Saul is so envious and jealous that he says, "Hey, here's the thing. I'm going to make an edict. I'm going to make a proclamation. Nobody eats so that I can be avenged of the enemy." In other words, Saul's acting like this is his fight. Like he's the one that has stepped into the arena with the enemy, and he hasn't. But because he's so envious, he begins to make these legalistic declarations that nobody can eat. It's false spirituality, folks. It's religiosity. It's legalism. It's saying, "No, no, you can't do this. You can't do that. Because after all, I'm Saul and I'm religious." And so the people couldn't eat. And this wasn't God's command, folks. This was Saul's. This is Saul's word, not God's word. So what happens? Well, all they of the land came to a wood. All the men out there hungry. Now they've been told they can't eat anything. They're in the middle of a battle, right? This is not the moment to declare a fast. When your men are out there running through the fields, fighting, you know, it takes a lot of energy to fight, doesn't it? I mean, I can't imagine, when I watch boxing matches and all that, I think, how do those guys do it for, you know, I mean, one round, I'm done. Yeah, I'd probably be done because I'd get knocked out the first, you know, 2 seconds. But, I mean, try and do that. Try and spar with somebody. Try and wrestle with some. I mean, I haven't done that in years, and I won't do that, you know, because I'll get hurt, you know, and pay for it for weeks afterwards. Hun Jim. No. but it takes a lot of energy to do that fighting and the physical combat that was going on with the enemy. This was a time when you would feed your men, give them some strength. But Saul says, "No, we're going to be religious now." And so they're there in the woods, making their way through the woods, and there was honey upon the ground. Honey. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped. It was just dropping out of the trees. The honey was just dropping right in front of them. You know, and they're there hungry, working hard, fighting. But no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. Saul said, "No, so we better not." But, verse 27, Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand and dipped it into the honeycomb and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Now this is interesting. Stay with me on this. This is a great part of the story. The people are starving to death. And Saul says, well, keep fighting, no eating. And yet there's honey available. Now, what you need to understand, honey, sweet stuff, right? The sweet stuff. What is that? Well, in the Word, if you study through, you'll find honey to be a picture of the sweetness of the Word and devotion to the Lord. So what Saul's saying is, don't eat any honey. Just get busy fighting. Don't eat. Just fight. And of course, you know, don't you? If you're trying to fight the enemy without the Word and devotion, time spent with the Lord, you're going to faint. You're going to fail. You're going to drop, aren't you? And you say, well, where do you get that? Well, Psalm 19, if you can jot it down, it's great, but I'll read this to you. And it's found in Psalm 19, verses 7 through 10. But here's what David says. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, listen, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of God are true and righteous altogether. Now watch. More to be desired are they. What's they? The law, the testimony, the statutes, the commandments, the fear of the Lord, the judgments of the Lord. All those things, right? They, more are they to be desired than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than the honey and the honeycomb, the psalmist says. The honey and the honeycomb, sweet and desired are they. What is the Word, the statutes, the commandments, the judgments, all the things God declares, the sweetness of those will do what? Enlighten the eyes. What happened to Jonathan when he ate the honey? His eyes were enlightened. He was satiated. He was satisfied by taking the honey, speaking, of course, of that devotional time we spend with God in His Word. That's where the strength's going to come from to keep fighting the battle, you see. And then answered one of the people and said, thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. So somebody saw Jonathan eating the honey and said, hey, your dad. Your dad said, you can't eat that. Nobody can eat any of that. You just blew it, buddy. You ate against the oath of your father. Then said Jonathan, verse 29, my father hath troubled the land. That's a nice way to say, dad, you know, is blowing it big time. You know what I'm saying? My dad is out to lunch, even though he won't let us eat any. Jonathan says, hey, my dad's troubling the land. He's causing problems, I think. See, he says, I pray you how mine eyes have been enlightened because I tasted of this honey. I had devotions in the Word, and I can see now clearly, and I'm refreshed, and I'm strengthened by this. What a silly thing to tell the people not to do this. But guys, let me tell you something. Religion always does that. Legalism always does that. What? Just go to church. Just show up. You know, do your duty. You might even pray once in a while. Just make sure you do these things. Have them check it off. Give you a star. That's all you need to do. Don't worry about it. Really? What about devotions and the Word, huh? Legalism knows nothing of that. Religiosity knows nothing of devotion. We talked about that at our men's retreat, didn't we, guys? The difference between dedication and devotion. A dedicated man, oh, he won't miss a Sunday. He'll be there religiously every week. And you hear that once in a while, don't you? I've never missed a Sunday in 35 years. And you think, wow. Woo. That's impressive. And let me tell you, that's what God's saying too. Wow, that's really something. The dedicated man may not miss a Sunday in 35 years. A devoted man will be there because he loves the Lord. And you can't stop him from being there. He will be there, not because he has to, because he gets to. You see. And so, how much more, Jonathan says, verse 30, if haply the people had eaten freely today the spoil of their enemies which they found, for had there not been now a much greater slaughter among the Philistines, if you guys were able to eat, wouldn't we have just cleaned up all the more? And they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very faint, and the people flew. Now watch this. This is the end of the day. The end of the day comes, which is all that the fast was supposed to be. All day. Remember, Saul says, no man may eateth until evening, right? Back there in verse 24. So now is the evening, and watch what happens. The people flew, verse 32, upon the spoils. They flew upon it. In other words, like, you know, flies swarming. They flew upon the spoils and took sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground, and the people did eat them with the blood. What does that mean? Well, as you know, that the Hebrews, the Jewish people, needed to drain the blood before they ate it. It had to be kosher, we would say. It needed to be drained and properly blessed, right? Before they could eat it. Well, these people could care less. Why? Because the religious ordinances that Saul placed on the people created an unnatural hunger for the flesh. The most fleshly people I know in this world are religious people. They don't miss a Sunday, but they don't miss one of those movies either. They don't miss a Sunday, but they don't miss Saturday night at the tavern. They don't miss a Sunday, but they harbor secret things in their life, and they think they're doing something righteous by showing up on Sunday morning. And I'll tell you something. It's a dangerous place to be, folks. Because your religious ordinances, oftentimes that we place on ourselves, they will create in us an unnatural desire for the flesh. Well, how can that be? Because it's not real. It's not reality. It's religion. It's not a relationship with the Lord. It's, you know, let's make a deal. I show up to church. I do whatever I want the rest of the time. Pretty much. Okay? I'll go to church. Don't mess with my life. See? And I'll tell you something. These people are scarfing down the oxen and the sheep and everything else, blood and all. They could care less. Because they've got a craving now that's abnormal because they've been put off by this false, pious religion that Saul has created. And so watch what happens. The people, they told Saul, saying, behold, the people sin against the Lord in that they eat with the blood. And he said, you have transgressed. Well, Saul, you caused it. You did it by putting this trip on them, made them so starving that as soon as the end of your little so-called fast happened, the people were like all over the animals, you know, eating the animals probably pretty rare, I would think, barely letting them cook. And so Saul says, you've transgressed, he says, you know. Roll a great stone unto me this day. So they bring a stone to Saul. Why? Well, he's going to make an altar. Saul said, disperse yourselves among the people and say unto them, bring me hither every man his ox and every man his sheep and slay them here and eat and sin not against the Lord in eating with the blood. And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night and slew them there. So Saul makes a makeshift altar and says, bring them all here. Bring all the animals here and we'll just do a burnt offering here. Well, wait a minute, Saul. Who gave you the right to do that? Are you the priest again? Are you playing the priest again? Yep. Again, trying to tell the people that they're breaking God's commandments while he then, of course, breaks God's commandments. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. And yet, Saul says, hey, bring them here that we can take and do this the right way, you see. And they slew them all. He's trying to fix this mess that the people have, you know, gotten into because of his own ordinance. And Saul built an altar unto the Lord. The same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. And Saul said, let us go down after the Philistines by night and spoil them until the morning light, and let us not leave a man of them. And they said, do whatever seemeth good unto thee. Sin takes root, guys, when you neglect the honey. The flesh kicks in when you try to make rules instead of receiving mercy. When devotion time is missed with the Lord, you can't make up for it with religious practices. Doesn't work. In fact, what you'll probably find is, like these people, your appetite for the flesh increases. The very thing that you're trying not to do oftentimes is the thing you stumble over, isn't it? Why? Because you're thinking about it all the time. Saul says, I know you're fighting the enemy, but don't eat anything. Now, what are they going to do? What are they going to think about? Eating. That's all you're going to think about, right? It's that old adage, you know, if I tell you right now, don't think about purple elephants. Whatever you do, don't think about a purple elephant. What are you doing? Purple elephant. I got Dumbo on my mind now. There they go. They're dancing around. Right? Now stop. Don't do that anymore. See? Don't think about it. Of course, that's what they're going to do. They thought about it, and it created this amazing desire to do exactly what he said they shouldn't do. But this wasn't God's word. It was Saul's. Then said the priest, let us draw near hither unto God, verse 36 says there at the end. Finally, the priest says, can we pray? I mean, what a novel idea. Can we just stop and pray about this? And Saul asks counsel of God. The priest says, can we pray? Obviously implying, I'm the priest, I probably should pray. And Saul asks counsel of God. He takes over again. And he says, shall I go down after the Philistines? This is his prayer. Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel? So Saul steps in. Oh, I guess we should pray. So Lord, are you going to deliver us? The Philistines, are you going to give them to us or not? But he answered him not that day. No answer. No answer was given. Why? Psalm 66, verse 18. The psalmist says, if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me. How can Saul think for a minute that God's going to respond to him? He's just breaking every commandment, doing his own thing. As we see here, he asks of the Lord this makeshift prayer, and the Lord doesn't give him an answer, obviously. And so verse 38 says, and Saul drew ye near hither all the chief priests of the people, and know and see wherein the sin hath been this day. He just does his own thing anyway. He says, let's move on. We didn't get an answer from the Lord. Let's just move on. It's a contrast, isn't it, from what Jonathan was doing? But watch what happens here. He says, let's gather everybody together and let's see wherein this sin hath taken place. What sin? Well, somebody obviously has told Saul what Jonathan did. He ate the honey, right? Now, Saul, if you recall, back there in verse 17, remember? Count the people. Who's missing? Oh, Jonathan and his armor bearer. Ah. They ate the honey. He knows already what he's doing. Watch this. He says, for as the Lord liveth, which saveth Israel, though it be Jonathan, my son, he shall surely die. He says, who sinned and who did this awful thing? And let me tell you, even if it's my son Jonathan, he's going to have to die. He's going to have to pay for this. Well, he already knows it's Jonathan. This is such a loving father. But there was not among them all these men, there was not among them all the people that answered him. Nobody even said a word. Nobody was speaking a word about this. Then said he unto all Israel, be ye on one side, and I and Jonathan my son will be on the other side. So he divides the people. And the people said unto Saul, do what seemeth good unto thee. Crazy man. No. he says, therefore Saul said unto the Lord God of Israel, give a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken, but the people escaped. So let's draw lots and see, let's kind of reduce the numbers here. Let's see where the lot, well, it falls on Saul and Jonathan. So the people are on the other side and there's no one left but Saul and Jonathan. And Saul said unto the Lord God of Israel, give a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken, but the people escaped. And Saul said, cast lots between me and Jonathan, my son. And Jonathan was taken. Then Saul said to Jonathan, tell me what thou hast done. And Jonathan told him and said, I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in mine hand, and lo, I must die. Jonathan doesn't defend himself. He doesn't say anything against his father at this point. His father's making this decision, a bad one. But Jonathan says, I'll die. And you know, this is a good word for me. When someone does something and they have no right, and that happens, doesn't it? When somebody, some self-righteous religious person says something, does something, and they have no right. And oftentimes the reaction we might want to have is, hey, I'll get you for that. Or you can't say that, or you can't do the other. Jonathan here says, I'll die. Why? Well, somebody's got to, right? Somebody's going to have to die. And in my life and in my own walk, guys, this is true. And it's not something that we relish doing necessarily, but I'll tell you what, it makes us more like the Lord. When there's a conflict and the mature believer says, I'll die. I don't have to have my way. I don't have to have it my way. I don't have to do that, or I don't have to really even defend myself in this. It's okay. I'll die. And this man, Jonathan, his father was a nut in a lot of ways. I mean, he's just doing a bad job. He has no right doing what he's doing, and he's messing up, and all the people are paying for it. Now he wants to kill his own son, and his son says, okay, all right, I'll die. Saul's wrong, but he's going to die anyway. Do you ever die when somebody's wrong? I mean, do you do that? Because we're instructed to do that in the scriptures. Paul declares in Ephesians, we're to esteem others better than ourselves. Men, husbands, are to love their wife even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her, died for his bride. Men, are you willing to die for your wife? Well, I'm not saying if someone breaks into the house, you know, do you send her to the door or to the window or wherever? And I'll go next time, honey. Isn't it your turn? That's not the point either, is it? But when there's issues, guys, when there's problems, are you willing to do that? Are you willing to die? Even if she's wrong. I know she never is. But, you know, even if she was, hypothetically, would you be willing to do that? Are we willing to do that? Jonathan was. And Saul answers, as Jonathan says, I'll die. And Saul says, God, do so and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. What a nice guy. Unbelievable. Saul, as you know, guys, is a picture in so many ways of the outwardly spiritual person trying to be something. And there's no reality, no relationship with the Lord in the heart. And what happens so often in those particular scenarios, in the homes where that's true, guess what happens to the kids? And Saul here pictures that very profoundly. His son, you see, you're going to die. That's true. But the people, verse 45, said unto Saul, shall Jonathan die, who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? Are you kidding me? The people say, you're going to kill Jonathan's the one who exercised faith, and he's the one responsible for us being victorious and winning this battle and all the rest. And you're going to kill him? I don't think so. That's what they're saying. God forbid, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day. So the people rescued Jonathan, and he died not. The people made a stand. And I got to say this again. One guy and his armor bearer made a stand against the enemy. It brought about a radical thing in the hearts of the people around. What? They made a stand. One person's faith can do a lot if it's exercised, can it? And the people said, no, he's not going to die today. No way. Not Jonathan. And Saul went up from following the Philistines, and the Philistines went their own place. So Saul took the kingdom over Israel and fought against all his enemies on every side, against Moab and against the children of Ammon and against Edom and against the kings of Zebul and against the Philistines. And whithersoever he turned himself, he vexed them. So he just went out, just taking on the enemy. Again, he's riding on, as we'll see later on, he's riding on the victory of his son. You can get a lot of mileage, can't you? And guys, you can do this. I can do this. We can all do this. When someone in this church exercises some faith, seems like there's some real victory going, you can jump on. You can jump on and ride that victory for a while. Get a lot of mileage out of it. You will benefit from others being victorious. You know that. But you can't just say, hey, I'll belong to a good church, or I'll belong to a church where they're exercising faith, and think that you're going to be able to ride that forever. Saul realized he couldn't. And he gathered, verse 48, a host and smote the Amalekites and delivered Israel out of the hands of them that spoiled them. Now the sons of Saul were Jonathan and Ishui and Melchishua. And the names of his two daughters were these, the name of his firstborn Merab and the name of the younger Michal. And the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam, the daughter of Ahimaaz. And the name of the captain of the host was Abner, and the son of Ner, Saul's uncle, Abner was. And Kish was the father of Saul, and Ner the father of Abner. So you get it? How'd you like to have a name Ner? Hey, Ner. You know, add a D to the end of that name. I mean, you know, you got that in school. I'd rather be a son. Abner, at least there's something there, you know. And there was sore war against the Philistines all the days of Saul. When Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him unto him. So Saul goes on the rampage again, riding the victory of his son. And as we'll see in this next chapter, next week, Saul has a real encounter with the enemy of the flesh, the Amalekites, but fails miserably, as we'll see. Drops the ball. He's not failing. And throughout the story, understand this, Saul doesn't fail because he's not strong enough or he doesn't have enough army, as we've seen with Jonathan, didn't have an army, just him and his armor bearer. He's failing because of one reason, as we'll see next week, disobedience. He's incomplete in his obedience to the Lord. And because of that, he fails miserably. And he fails miserably at overcoming the flesh because of that. And you hear me say this a lot, but it's so very true that when you're wrestling with things in the flesh, when you're wrestling with the tongue, when you're wrestling with gossip, or when you're wrestling with, you know, the flesh, lust or desires that don't belong, thoughts that don't belong there, whatever it might be, the obedience to the Lord is how you overcome those things. And again, the children of Israel have heard it time and time and time again. We looked at it again back in Deuteronomy where God said, listen carefully, obey my commands that you may be strong. And the people were weak. Oh, they weren't too weak to obey, remember. They were weak because they didn't obey. And that's the same scenario for us. You're not too weak to obey the Lord. When he gives you a command, the power's there to obey it. But you're weak because you don't. I'm weak because I don't. Saul was weak because he wouldn't obey, not because he couldn't. And I've said this before, and I think it bears repeating, then we're done. But guys, you can have as strong a walk in the Lord as you want to. You can have as much of God as you want. Now here's the sad part. You have exactly as much of him as you want. And that, you see, can change. How? Taste some honey. Eat some honey. Take the word tonight and eat it. Don't just let your fingers get sticky. Take your hand like Jonathan did and put it to your mouth. It says he took that honey and took his hand and put it to his mouth again and again. He ate it. He ate it. He ate it. Eat it tonight. Take the honey and eat it and watch and see what the Lord's able to do, strengthening you when you obey what he says, because now you're digesting it. You're eating it. And here's the real plus tonight. We get to eat the real honey in the communion table. I mean, there's the sweet stuff, isn't it? The sacrifice that Jesus made on the cross. He said, remember this. Remember me as you take and eat my body and drink the cup which represents the blood. Remember how sweet that was. And take it and eat it and drink it, because it is truly indeed life for you. And that's how things will change. Not because you're going to make a determination, or not because you're going to set some rule up like Saul did. That's just possibly going to make you more hungry for fleshly things. But make sure that you're eating honey, the word, and obeying what it says. And you will find strength beyond measure. And you're able to do that if you desire.